Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Welcome back to the In the Woods podcast, the show dedicated to your strange and eerie encounters outdoors. Today's episode features
a truly haunting tale, from unearthly sounds coming from the forest to a family left in fear. This is In the Woods, the show all about the mysterious and terrifying things that go down beyond the tree line. I'm Jensen, the new host of In the Woods, at the request of Darkness Prevails. It's a pleasure to be here tonight. For a link to our Discord where you can be interviewed for a future episode and discover more horror podcasts, go to eeriecast.com. For more from me, you can also find me on YouTube under Original Jensen.
I am accompanied by Entropic, who will be sharing his story to give us a little insight on what happened that day. Entropic, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, for sure. I have a channel of my own, and I also do horror stories and things like that, but I grew up in a haunted house, and that kind of pertains to the story itself, and then I've just been in love with horror kind of ever since.
All right, cool. And whereabouts exactly did you grow up? You don't have to give town or anything, no need to dox yourself, but more or less like the backstory of your, I guess, your upbringing in this house. Was it like a small town or a big town? Or
yeah, for sure. I lived in a decent sized town, but I was in the very woodsy part of it. So this is in the deep south of Georgia, kind of smack in the middle of the state. But around five or six, I moved to a new house that was on a new plot of land, and it was the last house on the street. So I had a neighbor to my right, and then everything past that and behind us for miles were woods.
Okay. So yeah, so you're saying about 5 or 6 years old at this time, or this a little bit after that?
Yeah. So this is right when I'm 5 or 6. So I'm very impressionable at this age.
All right. Yeah. So I guess go ahead and take us down the road of what happened that night or day, or let us know.
For sure. So as a child, I was allowed to go out in the woods and do whatever, just because the situation with where I lived, I didn't have a lot of friends that lived nearby. So my parents encouraged me to go out in the woods and explore and have a good time. The problem with that, however, with this new house we moved to, the backyard and the side yard went for miles before there was another living person. So one of my goals was to I wanted to walk through the woods and go to the next town, which was about 7 or 8 miles away. But I remember one day I was just kind of in the backyard doing my own thing. And I kind of had a very weird sense where all the noise in the woods kind of stopped. And so my senses kind of heightened, and I kind of look around, and I notice I'm hearing chanting and like a rhythmic beat coming from deep in the woods. So, you know, me being 5 or 6 and being allowed to go in the woods, naturally I wanted to explore that. So I went out there, and so it was around midday. And it seemed as if the further I would go into the woods, the sound or the beat or the rhythm or whatever, it seemed to draw me from my house and out deeper into the woods. So the closer I'd get to the sound or where I thought the sound was, it would appear that it would slightly start to fade. So I would, you know, I'd keep going forward and trying my best to have local landmarks to make sure I knew where I was going, because I'm by myself in the woods. And then it finally takes me to a point where I can no longer see my house behind me, and the trees kind of obscure everything, and I'm kind of in the middle of the woods. And I notice that the sound appears to stop, but my high sense of caution still seemed to be there. And then around that time, it started to wash over me that I was in a place I shouldn't be. And so I was looking around, and I kind of got disoriented just by this weird sensation I was feeling. And then it would appear that the trees in front of me, where I thought the noise was coming from, a good distance away, whether it was the trees or the time of day or the shadows. But it felt like there was something ahead of me peering out every now and then. I would catch movement, even though I wasn't moving. I'd catch movement as if something somewhat large and skinny poking out from behind trees. And so I finally kind of caught notice of this. And whenever I would focus on a tree, whatever it was would go to a different one. And I knew that something was out there with me, whether it was human or it was paranormal or cryptid or whatever. I just knew that I should not be there. And so I tried my best to venture my way back, and I'm sure I got sidetracked, but eventually I found my house. But the whole way back, it felt like whatever it was that I saw out in the woods followed me back. And so eventually I made it back to my house, and then I would notice in my backyard ever since that incident, whatever would pop out from behind the woods would be at the tree line. And so it followed me to my house. And so the way my house was situated, it was on a slope. So part of the basement was exposed going downhill into the trees. And we had a back door to the basement. And I remember one day, we were always instructed to keep that door locked, even though we would go in and out of it all the time. And eventually, it just eventually happened where either me or one of my siblings left that back door unlocked. And then I remember one day we went downstairs to the basement or whatever, and we saw that the basement door was slightly ajar. And then ever since then, it would appear that my house would be haunted by some kind of entity since that.
Your siblings, were they aware of the situation as well? Was it something that you'd brought up to them or something that you kept to yourself for a while? Or
so that was the thing. At first, I didn't know what to make of it, and I didn't tell anyone. But it quickly became apparent to my family that something had definitely changed. So the basement at the time was unfinished, and so but we had an air hockey table down there, so we would want to be down there and kind of just run around and be rowdy. Ever since that incident, basement just had like a cloud of just negative energy. And no one wanted to go in the basement anymore. In fact, it got to the point with my siblings and the rest of my family, we would lock the stairs, the door to the stairs that led to the basement. We just locked it just because no one wanted to be down there anymore.
Interesting. Your parents too, they had this uneasy feeling where they would just tell you like, hey, you guys go ahead and just keep out of there. Like, let's not go down there anymore.
They were more your typical horror movie parents where it's like, oh, it's just your imagination. However, it did get to the point, and this is connected to the story. Later on, we were watching a horror movie and the basement came up because of, you know, how everything was. And I remember one of my siblings asking my dad or, hey, are ghosts real during this movie? Before he could answer, in our basement, some type of box tipped over and hit one of the studs or one of the foundation boards or whatever to the house and shook the whole house right before he could answer. And so right then he basically said, no one's allowed to go into the basement.
That's crazy.
That was really bizarre.
Yeah. Do you have any experiences in that forest outside of that event?
Oh yeah, we have several. I remember just kind of how our household was at the time. My dad had to travel a lot. And so I remember one vacation, he had to go on a trip during that vacation. So he said he's just going to stay home. And so it got to the point to where I kind of got used to the whatever you would call it. I kind of got used to it. And we eventually finished that basement. And what ended up happening is I moved my room down there. And so I liked the space and I kind of got used to the energy or whatever. And it didn't bother me too much. I just wouldn't focus on it. But anyways, so my dad's by himself in our house. Remember, I get a text from my dad saying, do you leave like a radio on or a laptop on in your room or something? Like, no, like I don't have anything like that. It's like, why do you ask? And he's like, well, late last night, his room was slightly to the left up. So he was on the main floor. His bedroom was just slightly adjacent to mine. Not directly below, but it was close enough. And he texted me. He's like, well, I thought I heard someone talking coming from your room downstairs. He's like, well, I thought maybe it was just like an alarm or I was hearing something. Then he walked over to where it was directly above my room. He could hear two people talking coming right directly below from where my room was. And so I asked him, I was like, hey, did you go down there and check? He's like, no, I'm too afraid.
That rhythmic chanting, did you hear it any other times outside of the forest after that too? Or just that one time?
No, that was the only time. And it was so bizarre because I remember thinking like, oh, like, this is like, it wasn't something where it was like, am I imagining this? Like I was like captivated by this sound. Like I was like, oh, there must be some kind of festival or some kind of activity going on where there's a group of people out in these woods. But no, that was the only time.
How far did the woods span out? Was it like a good, like no real clearing, or was it pretty open, or just like acres of woods? Like you went into the woods and it kept going.
It was honestly, so it continued downhill for a good ways, and it got to the point to where it was very thick with trees, and it was almost not quite swampy, but I mean, there was definitely standing water in good sections. So you wouldn't necessarily want to be out there for any reason unless you were some kind of like wildlife official or something, or like no normal person would have a reason to be out there. It went for miles. Like directly back and to the left, the next person you were going to see was going to be in a town 10 miles away.
Yeah. Do you think you'd ever go back there again to kind of revisit it and see if, you know, what you had heard that day might still be out there?
That's the thing is, as I grew up and eventually moved out of that house, they continued building to the left. And so more homes kind of went back there, but, I have no desire to go back to that house or to that part of the woods. No.
Yeah. That'd be interesting. You know, someone's house is just built over this spot and they just, you know, hey, who's playing dubstep in there? You know, it's just, they keep hearing these chants and no one's in there. Just, it's a quiet room.
Just beats. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Did it sound, and that was kind of tribal, or did it sound, it just sounded like, can you kind of give us like in your own, I guess, own impression, like what the chanting sound like? Was it overt, like almost vocal, or did it sound like an instrument?
That's part of the reason why it was so weird and captivating was I couldn't make out any direct words or anything. It was just a rhythmic beat. And then someone was just chanting just sounds. It wasn't, but that was the thing, is like I could hear it clearly.
Yeah.
It wasn't like a muffled song, or this was like clear, whatever it was very audible. And then we had other haunting experiences within the house. I don't know if you'd be interested to hear that.
Yeah, we'd love to know, kind of, because I feel like, you know, these hauntings might have escalated from that first encounter. So these feel like they definitely kind of branched off and something might have, you know, I think a lot of people believe in like spirits attaching themselves to people or to events, and then they tend to linger. I mean, I personally have had experiences like that where it just seems like they follow me from house to house and, you know.
Oh, wow.
You know, I've gotten to points where I smudged, like this house I moved into this time, you know, I'd taken a shower and then saw like through my curtains, it was a little translucent, and I saw like someone standing there outside, and I was like, So I just finished my shower and I was just terrified. I didn't want to give it any, you know, you can't give it any energy. But when you're a kid, you know, you don't know these kind of things. You just, fear, you know, and
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what other experiences did you have? Because what age did you live in this house entirely from? So like from age 5 to like what would you say?
I was there until, I moved out until I was 18.
Wow.
And my parents lived there for another 5 years after I left, and still had issues with things. But yeah, other things. So there's a couple of different things. So kind of going back to that basement, whatever it was, for the longest time, really liked the basement. It was dark. It was cold. I wouldn't really go down there a lot. So it kind of had its own space. But we would keep that basement door locked. But the problem was with that, with our basement, was that was where we kept a lot of our food storage. So, so you know, you have your normal kitchen and pantry, but then we have excess food. We'd go downstairs, or if we needed, you know, like a specialty sauce or, you know, some canned fruit or whatever, we'd have to go in the basement. So what eventually happened was, whether it was me or one of my siblings, we always made it a conscious effort to keep that basement door locked. So we eventually got a dog, and our dog really was drawn to that basement door. And so I remember at night we would let our dog, you know, just kind of sleep wherever, and there'd be just a dozen times where our dog would just lose it at that basement door, and we'd always make sure it was locked. Then I remember one night our dog was losing it again. I was like, oh, okay, you know, whatever. Like, I'm going to go get my dog. And I go over to the basement door, and someone left it unlocked, and the door was slightly ajar. There, the hauntings went from the basement to the rest of the house.
And why would you guys have, like, the basement open during the day? I mean, did you use it for storage generally? I know you said it was your room at one point, but before that...
So we would just go down there to get, you know, we would make sure we go down during the daytime. So half the basement was accessible to, like, outside, but the other half was, like, clearly underground. And so we would go down there only when it was light outside, and we'd turn every light on in the basement to grab whatever we were grabbing, and then we'd go back up. So it just eventually happened to where one of us either had our hands full and couldn't lock it, and we forgot to lock it when we went to go back. And so from whatever down in that basement eventually made its way up and was no longer restricted by that door.
Yeah. Did you ever find yourself in the walking your dog out in the woods and, you know, maybe anything happened out there?
There'd be not necessarily. Our dog was a house dog. We'd keep her inside. I mean, she'd get out every now and then, but She would always bark from the main floor out to the backyard and that the basement and things like that.
Interesting. And then was there ever a time period where you felt like there was no, like, any activity, things seemed to calm down and get back to normal?
Yeah, that's kind of the weird thing, was there would definitely be times where it would be heightened or whatever, and then things would just be cool for a month or two or whatever. And then it'd always be something would happen, and they would kick up again for another couple of days or weeks or whatever, and then kind of die down. But it was definitely an up and down thing where it got to the point we would almost forget about it. We'd be like, oh, like, do something, and then we'd realize, like, oh, like, yeah, we can't go in the basement.
Yeah. And what would you think? Would you classify, like a spirit or energy or an entity, or, you know, what do you think it was?
I honestly, I don't think it was a human entity. The reason for that, just because the section where my house was, there were no people there. Like, this is just kind of the wood. I think this is something more either like a woodland entity or some kind of demonic entity just out in the dark woods to where no one would bother it. And I eventually stumbled across it.
Yeah. So it's like a developing area. And then, yeah, you come out there and probably no one's really stepped foot out there and who knows how long. And you just came across it, and that's crazy. So, you know, and then it takes these little breaks every now and then, like it's on Christmas break and it's with its little entity family. But,
another detail I should share about the house was that house was built. So this wasn't a house that was been out there for a while. People have been living there. This was we were the first people to live there. Yeah. Another incident. So there was a handful of incidences that really bothered me. As I got older, I remember whenever I was in the basement, images of different terrible things would just be projected into my head. It was almost like pop-up ads where, you know, I'm just doing my own thing. And then out of the blue, just get these weird, just things I never would think about ever just pop into my brain. It's like, oh my gosh. And it just was accompanied by that negative energy. Some of the different things, first thing that would really scare us, this was back before our basement was finished, and so we didn't go in the basement, but it was right after that door incident where the basement door was left open. My dad was, he'd travel a lot, and so it was often just my mom, and so a lot of times at this beginning, a lot of the activity would only take place when my dad was gone.
Now, before we go on, a message from our sponsors.
A couple of things that would really freak me out would be like around 1 or 2 in the morning, the alarm to our garage door would go off. So not the garage door itself, but the door that led to the garage
That was inside the house? Open.
It was inside the house, would be opened. Our garage door would be closed. And that door would open and would set an alarm off and wake everyone up. So we would wake up and the alarm's going off. And so we don't, you know, do we call the police? Like, we don't know, like, is someone in the house? So my mom, the only adult in the house, had to go find the door. And it wasn't the front door, wasn't the back door, but it was the door to the garage. And my mom's like, did anyone open this door? And this was a door that had a deadbolt and just like a knob lock. So whatever it was, had to undo both.
That's scary. And did she keep the keys with her, like, at all times? So, like, that was, like, on her person, or not where it was, like, easy accessible for you guys to just, like, open it up, you know, if she were to lock
it? Well, that was the thing. Well, I mean, it was, so we were inside, so, you know, we would have access to the locks. I mean, no one would, me and my siblings at this point, we were kind of on high alert when it was just my mom, because we didn't feel, you know, comfortable. Yeah.
Being out and so no one else at like 1 a.m. like out. Yeah, every kid just wants to be in their bed and just like, yeah, every shadow that moves, yeah. you have these images in your head. At least me, I was scared of the dark forever. And
we would be in our room, and then we would leave our doors open, turn the hallway light on, have night lights. I mean, the whole thing. And we, none of us, number one, would have no business being up that late, but I mean, we were too terrified to be out without an adult, or you know, in the dark house.
And then, as an adult, I mean, have you brought up these stories with your parents? And you know, maybe they had something happen to you at that time, but they didn't want to tell you guys to, you know, kind of incite fear.
Yeah, my mom, she had a couple of different instances where she saw people looking into windows. From whether the backyard or the side of the house, it was always on the sides where it was directly involved or directly contacting woods. So it would never come from our neighbor's side or the front of the house. It'd always be coming from behind or to the side. But there's a handful of times where she saw people looking in our house.
Like groups figure, of people, or just, figures. So it did look like almost like shadow people, or no distinct
details. So it wasn't like, and you know, this was like, our windows are clearly open. There's not like a curtain there or blinds. But yeah, very indistinguishable, just entity just peering in.
Would this be at night, sometime, anything during the daytime when it was like more obvious, or? You know, what did she ever mention?
A lot of
why
it,
she was looking.
A lot of it was when it was either during the day itself or when it was starting to get dark. Not necessarily nighttime or the night itself or early morning. It was either night or late, or not night, day or late day.
All right. And then what other kind of stories you have from this house? I feel like there's so much history here. You know, did you ever, anybody around your town ever say, like, you know, hey, that house you live at's built in on, you know, something stereotypical where it's like, there's an Indian burial ground around those parts. I don't know, you know, the exact area. I know I grew up in a small town where, you know, my family's house, it's 5 miles away from like a historic Indian burial ground. And, you know, we've had sightings out there personally, and you know, I'd seen like red eyes. I don't think that was in correlation with that, but it was out there in the woods, like, you know, good 40-minute drive to the nearest Walmart, that kind of, you know, out there.
Yeah. Yeah, so the section of Georgia where I lived, there a lot of the towns and the counties and everything had Native American names or tribes associated. So it was definitely, and especially that part of where I grew up, there it was very rich with Civil War history and with Native American history. And so, but you know, it's hard to say. It's just so weird, just kind of the section we were in. I can't imagine anyone wanting to be out there. But I mean, that definitely is a factor of, you know, there might've been some overlap with some historical significance in terms of, you know, death or burial grounds or battles or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Did you guys ever have like campfires in the backyard at nights or, you know, just family gatherings, things like that, where you guys would be all out at night, maybe you see something similar or, you know, you're on high alert cause it's something in the back of your head.
The only time that was, we were all together for that was that basement incident. We were watching something, but, we would never, we had no business being out in our backyard. We had no, we didn't invite friends over and hang out or anything. We would avoid it.
Yeah. So you're more like homebody people. You just like to be in your homes. You enjoy, you know, each other's company. Well, not so much.
We would go do events or whatever, but there kind of came a point to where it was like, we just need to get out of this house for a night or a day or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, in terms of events, like we wouldn't host things and go out in our backyard. Like we
have a little
like,
shindig, and hey everybody, let's get the Ouija board out, you know, like.
Yeah, no. Well, and then people also kind of picked up on it too. And they kind of also had the desire to be nowhere near the woods.
Yeah. Did you have, were there any other like neighborhood children in that area?
No, that was part of the reason why we were kind of given free reign of, you know, kind of go do whatever. There were no kids on my street.
Wow. So it was just, yeah, it was like your own little jungle gym of exploring. And I remember back, you know, I mean, I'm 27 and, you know, I'm going to say we're probably around the same age, you know, so. Mm-hmm. You know, when we were kids, you could just go out. You can do whatever. I used to walk like the whole town, different towns. I would walk like what would take probably now like a 2-hour drive, you know, to different towns. I would just walk it. I walk for like 8 hours a day. And, you know, I never thought like, oh, I'm going to get kidnapped. But,
you know. Oh, yeah. We grew up kind of in an era where we didn't have cell phones or whatever. I mean, I don't know about you, but I was always given the rule to be inside before the streetlights would turn on.
Yeah,
it was like my
they gave me like a watch. My dad did at one point. He said, "Okay, if you see this at 7:30, you're grounded." And I was like, "Oh, okay." So, you know, I had to be home before then. And then when daylight savings came, he was like, "Yeah, just if you see it get dark, get home." And I was like, "Okay." But sometimes I'd be out there till like 11 or 12. One time I was out at like 2 a.m. I don't even know why I was out that late, and it was just
wow,
you know. And I was far too, like super far in the woods. You know, because I like being in the woods. And, but yeah, same thing. I thought I heard something or something was following me. And I never ran faster in my life. I ran home like 4 miles straight, just running, 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 running. You know, even when I got to the city area, I was still running, terrified.
Yeah. Let's see. I have two other big events that happened that would always freak me out. I remember, so kind of, you know, my dad was always traveling. Sometimes my mom would have to do stuff. And so there would be times where you'd have to come home to just an empty house. So my bus driver, she was very close with my family. Because, I mean, you'd have to pick us up when we were kind of out of the way. And so, you know, she picked us up for years, you know, from elementary to high school or whatever, picking us up in the bus. And so she kind of knew me and my parents, and she knew if both cars were in the driveway, my parents were home, and if both cars were gone, that it was home alone. So a lot of times my bus driver would ask, "Hey, is, you know, someone here for you to, you know, to be here?" Or like, cause you know, I don't want to drop you off if you're just going to be by yourself, if you're locked out or whatever. But I remember a time where, be a couple of times where, we would come home, both cars would be gone, my mom would be away or whatever, and the front door to my house would be wide open. My bus driver would say, is there someone here for you? Or, like, is there a reason why the door is open? a lot of times we were just said, no, it's kind of just what happens with my house. That was kind of freaky. And then I remember one time, this is the second part. This one really freaked us out. And I to this day, I still have no idea. Same situation, except it was later at night. It was around 7 or 8. So it was dark or getting dark or whatever. And it was my mom and my siblings. And we come home and we pull in the driveway and we whip the car in front of the house and the headlights shine on the house. The front door is wide open. And our first thought was our dog has probably ran away. We're freaking out. So we're more worried about the dog. So we go inside and we're screaming at our dog's name, but thankfully we hear our dog barking. So my house had a second story and had a basement, but our dog would never we always bought our dogs older. We never got them as puppies, so we got them older. A lot of them were retired show dogs. They were older dogs. They didn't really like stairs, so they wouldn't really go in the basement. They wouldn't really go up the stairs because the stairs to my second floor, you'd go up a set of stairs and then there'd be like a landing and then you'd turn and go up more sets of stairs. Quite a physical feat for an older animal. We go in the house and we can't find our dog, but we hear it barking. So we're like, okay, at least we can hear the dog barking. And so we're trying to pinpoint where the barking's coming from, and we realize it's coming from upstairs. And so we kind of all look at each other and we're like, this is not normal. Like, we were at our first thought was, there's someone upstairs and our dog has cornered this person. So we all go upstairs hesitantly, and then we go up the set of stairs and we get on the landing and we turn the corner. I can kind of see up the stairs a little bit, not much. I can see just where the stairs are situated in the hallway is. I can hear my dog. I can't see my dog, but I can hear it. And I can see that the attic door, you know, the attics that it's got the string on it and you pull it down and it's got the ladder and it pulled out. That is open. Which we never use it. I mean, I think I maybe see my dad go up there maybe 3 times. The amount of time I lived there.
Yeah, all those years.
So door is open and the ladder is down. I go up the stairs and my dog is losing it. Like foaming at the mouth, barking up this ladder into this dark attic. So we don't have a light switch for the attic. Like, you have to go up the ladder first, all the way up, and then the walk 4 or 5 feet, pull this chain that illuminates the attic. Only half the attic. The other half is still in darkness. And so everyone's freaking out. And my mom comes up and my siblings come up and we're like, dog is barking like there's something in this attic.
How high up is the attic like string? Is it something like you or your siblings can grab, or is it one that's like high up? Like, you have to, make an effort to get to it.
It would hang up down about a foot or two, and like a typical ceiling. Definitely, you would have to be at least a preteen to access it. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing too. And that was the freaky thing, was the spring to that attic door was either misaligned or broken, because when you would pull it down, you would have to grab it and
put some body weight into it.
You'd have to use your body weight to pull it down. Like, and there was no way at this time my brother or I could have done that, or would want to. There was nothing in this attic, and it just had like spaced boards. You couldn't step off the space boards in the attic. Like, there wasn't like a floor.
Oh yeah, it was just they're just foundation or. Yeah,
yeah,
it's open, the insulation between each one.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, we might have went up there once and got the insulation and got, super irritated skin. And we're like, yeah, this is dumb. Why did we come up here? But yeah, so anyways, and then the things pull down, dog's losing it. And so it's like, what do we do? Like, do we call the police?
Did anybody go up there? Anybody was like, you go up there.
Anybody, and so what we did, honestly, is we were just like, let's just close the attic door. Pretend it didn't happen.
Yeah. Let's just close it. Who's ever out there? They're out there. They can stay there.
Yeah. But thankfully, nothing ever came down or nothing that we saw. That was the thing, because during the time, my bedroom was down the hall from that. So the whole night, my ears were straining to hear that creaky spring, expand or whatever, as if someone were to come down. My fear was that there was a burglar up there. Didn't know what to do. Ran up there and hid. And just waited until he thought we left. But, there was nothing. I mean, nothing ever came down.
Yeah, that's scary. So what might have went up there might still be up there to this day, then.
Oh, for sure. We sold the house. We didn't, we didn't smudge it, but we had different religious people come out there and bless the house and things like that. And that would go away. And then for whatever reason, just whether at the time or the persistence of whatever entity, it would eventually find its way back.
Yeah, that's to my understanding, is that smudging, at least that's what I do, is I practice with smudging, and it only lasts, X amount of time. So I just have my phasmophobia smudger on standby. So, I try not to think about it. I feel like the more I think about it, the more energy I give whatever it is. And
for sure.
Yeah. And then, I don't know, it's just so paranoid sometimes, especially with what we do, reading horror stories, essentially. Yeah. And it's in your headspace, you're thinking about it and, and I still go to bed listening to horror stories. I'm sure whoever's listening to this, you probably can relate to both of us a lot. We're fascinated by it. It's fascinating and it's terrifying and it's beautiful too, but yeah, it's scary.
For sure.
Let's see. Oh, let me take a little break, breathe. Today's video is brought to you by Cheerio. No, I'm just kidding.
Raid Shadow Legends. Yeah.
With over 1 million players listening to spooky stories worldwide. No.
You have 3,000 power.
If you hit the like and subscribe button, you'll help. You'll raid Shadow it. Yeah. These are pretty terrifying. I'm actually getting enthralled in these, just hearing them. I'm like, Jesus Christ, my eyes are all popping out.
Yeah, for sure. Well, one of the fun things, too, what I really like about it is I feel like there's an entertainment aspect, a huge entertainment aspect of what we do, and whether it's narrating or writing or whatever. But I feel like also with these stories and all the stuff that we do, I feel like there's an education aspect to it as well. I feel like a lot of times we'll hear these stories and they have these experiences and they share them with people kind of know how to handle their own situation.
A lot of people comment that fight or flight sense gets engaged without even having to essentially be there, because I've always played situations in my head when I'd hear stories like what would I do Yeah, and I really do feel like, those red flags that pop up, you see them more often once you hear other people's stories and you know what to look out for.
Right. I remember there was a story, I don't know if it was Lazy Masquerade or Phantom Librarian, but there was one story, it's kind of, that would actually technically fall under the topic that we're talking about. However, it was unrelated. This was in a different state altogether. But I remember hearing a story about these people going camping. And at a previous camping event or whatever, they got some things stolen. And so for whatever reason, they decided to videotape the camp surveillance, while they slept. And so then, the morning they wake up and they notice a couple things moved around. So they go back to watch the camera, and some dude out of nowhere just, comes and goes through their stuff. But to make things creepier, not only does he go through their stuff, but he goes into their tent entirely that they're sleeping in while they're sleeping, goes into the tent and is in there for 10 to 15 minutes. And so I remember hearing that story And I was on a camping trip, and we were on public land kind of near this road that was very it was in the middle of nowhere. But however, at the same time, this road, you have to take this road to get to this other part of town. So despite it kind of being in the middle of nowhere, this road was quite frequented by different, you know, people driving or whatever. So we're parked. Our campsite is down the hill from this, you know, it's, you know, 100 meters, 200 meters, whatever, from this thing. But there, it's a huge slope down. And then there's like bits of rock kind of just scattered across this.
And another quick message from our sponsors.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Dirt mound or whatever, the ground that leads down to our campsite. Mm-hmm. And I remember at night, and ever since I got into this, or ever since I've heard these stories, made the educated choice to always go camping or go into the woods with a firearm. So I remember at night, it was right before I was about to fall asleep, and I heard rocks coming down the hill as if someone were to be coming down a hill, and it sounded like, you know, it wasn't just like one rock.
Like it was
like, yeah, it was like, it was a shuffle with rocks accompanied by it. Mm-hmm. So my first instinct, I think of this story and I'm thinking somebody's coming to my campsite, coming to my tent and being in my tent for 10 minutes while I'm asleep. So I get out, I have my gun, I have my flashlight. Granted, there are other campsites, but they're not behind us. Like, that's where this huge slope is, and that's where I'm hearing the sound. So there shouldn't be anyone coming down this hill. Because for anyone to be coming down the hill, you have to park your car on this road, which, you know, two-lane road. So there's not really a shoulder to park on. You'd have to park in the middle of the road or whatever, get out and come down this hill. And so that's like, this is what's happening. Someone's coming down this hill. Someone, you know, someone's trying to rob us. And so, you know, I go out there and there's obviously nothing, but I always think about that. Feel like with these stories, with all the different narrators and different story writers, that they've, whether or not it's, we realize it, but they've given us additional survival instinct. I feel like I have more information. I feel like I'm more educated going into the woods, that I have a game plan, that people know where I am, that I have, you know, the necessary things I need, just because I've heard so many stories.
Yeah. I imagine, you know, what people don't think about is there's like two types of people that go into the woods, the ones that are going for a purpose, and then the ones that are going to be a little more nefarious because it's, you know, the final frontier, you know, like the Wild West, there's no cops out there. They can do whatever they want. And, right. You know, people don't think about that very often, but those people are out there, and there's you know, people that you wouldn't expect. You know, there's so many stories of people driving, you know, in a secluded area, and there's a girl inside the road, or someone broken down, or someone walking, and you know, they might pass them by, and then you see a car headlights turn on, and then they tailgate them. And I've just heard so many stories like that. And, you know, it just seems like a repeating occurrence, you know, just, and these are the people that, you know, we know of, and, you know, imagine all the people that you pull over to help these people and they don't, you know, maybe they're not someone's child, maybe, you know, it's someone that's older and they've become disassociated with their family and they just kind of do their own thing and, you know, they disappear. It's so many cold cases and it's terrifying, you know, and as a parent now, you know, my daughter's 7 and I'm just, I feel like, you know, I always made fun of those parents that would like shadow over their children and just, you know, watch everything they do. But I'm like that. I'm like in public, just always over her and just terrified of, you know, yeah. And she's a girl, you know, not like you know, she's defenseless, but she's seven, she's tiny, and people are terrible and scary, and you know, and that's just people. There's so many other things out there.
Wow. That kind of reminds me, this is another story that would technically fall under what we're talking about, but it's not my story, but it's a story my friend's dad told us, and I was kind of in the room at the time. But during that, I don't know if you know this or not, but the Challenger explosion with the space shuttle, in the 80s. So it blew up, and what NASA or whatever, what they needed to do to figure out, because at the time they didn't know what happened. But what they needed to do was they needed to find every piece of that shuttle to, you know, figure out what, you know, what happened. And, you know, because they, at the time they didn't know. So what they did was, I don't know if it's this event or not, but it was I don't know if it was a Challenger itself, but there was a spacecraft, that, you know, the government was testing, and it exploded over swamplands or whatever. And so they're like, oh, great. Like, this is literally in nowhere. Like, we'll have to take boats. We'll have to take, you know, all terrain vehicles to get to this place. Cause like there's no access to this place. There's no roads. So he was telling me, he had a buddy. And so they had these teams go out there to find these pieces. About a dozen or two cases while they're just looking for space shuttle parts. They're just looking for that. They found a dozen or two people. They're killed and dumped in these woods, whether they were tied to trees or hanging or, you know, just disposed just out in these. But they weren't even going out there to find people, and they found like a couple dozen.
That's crazy. I'm sure. I mean, were these... The authorities, were they, you know, police officers that were helping these people find the missing spacecraft, or did they have to like contact? Did you mention that if they had to contact the authorities and had them come out and wait for them?
Oh yeah, so they contacted the authorities, and a lot of them were either missing people or just missing, you know, children or whatever. And he suspects that a lot of it was just mob hits, and they just discarded the bodies out there, and you know, there's no one out there, so you know, who's gonna find them? And it just so happened a freak accident happened that caused it to overlap, and then they found these bodies out there in the woods.
Wow. Yeah, I wonder if anything ever happened from those, you know, if they were able to trace back or, you know, finally put someone to rest, you know, at least on a case of, hey, this person's missing. They get them off the egg carton, and you know, their family knows now.
Right. The stories that bother me a lot are where they're like looking for people, like in different, you know, whether it's national forests or in the woods, like they're like doing a search party, and they find bodies that they aren't looking for. Like, that to me scares me. Like, there are people missing we don't even know about. I went on a cruise down there or whatever, and we left from Galveston, but I remember hearing that the stretch of road from the airport Galveston is like, that's, they think that's like the longest stretch road where they found the most bodies with the people just discarded, which always freaks me out. Cause I remember, I currently live in the West. And so I'd go to Vegas, you know, whether for work or for, you know, whatever. And I just remember driving for miles, just not seeing any service stations or gas stations or whatever. And I always think to myself, just because of that, I'm like, how many bodies are out there we just don't even know about?
I think about that stuff all the time. It just keeps me up at night. And, you know, luckily there's melatonin that kind of helps, but there's only so much.
For sure.
yeah, I'm trying to think. I think a lot of my scary stories personally from the woods I've suppressed, but I feel like listening to your stories have just made some of them resurface, at least in the back of my mind. They're just kind of like, you know, they're bubbling up like a cauldron coming to temp. And
nice.
Yeah. One of your stories reminded me when I must have been probably around 5 or 6. And, you know, I was with my dad at the time. You know, my parents were separated. So at this point I was with my dad, you know, whatever, for the weekend or whatever time I'd be at his house. And he lived kind of like the next neighborhood over from my family's, at least my dad's side of the family's house, which is like out there in the woods, and next town over is an even smaller town. So he's living in this town at the time, and he's one of these guys that has the bonfires at nights, and you know, he's got some nice work friends over. They're all drinking, having time. Very little children are there, you know, and when I say little children, I don't mean they're small kids. I mean, there's no kids. It's just me. So I got to make my own fun, you know? And I think, I'm thinking my little brother was born around that time, and he must've been like a year old, or, you know, not old enough to even really be a person. He was just kind of like a thing. So he's just, you know, he's just there. Can't really do very much with him. So I make my own fun. And at one point during the night, they got the fire going and they're making s'mores. And I'm like, oh, gosh, this is my thing. I love s'mores. I love food. So I go to make it. And I'm on my dad's like tailgate of his truck sitting. They have it backed up against the fire. So we have another kind of chair. And it's like a low riding truck, small truck. So I'm able to get my stick in the fire still. And I'm got it going, my feet are hanging, and like the marshmallow is on fire. I'm just kind of staring at it, you know, just as a kid, you just kind of stare at the fire.
Yeah.
And it just like burns and it melts off the stick and lands right on my foot as it's on fire. So my foot's like on fire and I kick it off. I'm like, so I'm like, foot's burned. And then my dad's just like, hey, just go sit over here. He puts like an ice pack, or he does like the dad thing. He gets like a thing of peas out of the freezer and puts on my
foot. You know, it puts the least amount of effort into helping. Yeah.
That's awesome. You know, this will thaw in 2 minutes, but here you go, you know, so
exactly.
You put that on there, and I'm still wanting to be a part of the whole situation outside, but I didn't want to either. So I remember I was sitting, for context, you know, it's a small house, small, not brick, but it's like the stone house, like old school stone where they use, you know, like, I don't even know what kind you would call it. It just looks like stone that's been rearranged to make a house, like an old Western style.
Right.
And across from the street, there's a little gas station, like mom and pa gas station, very little lighting, no lighting on the side, just in the front, maybe a little bit lighting at the gas pumps. And this is 2003 at the time, 2002. And I just remember like my eyes kept getting fascinated to this gas station, but not to the gas station, but to the side of it. And keep in mind this whole area, besides this road that crosses from my dad's house to the gas station and maybe some of the houses that are, you know, each house is like an acre of land in between. So there's no neighbors really right next to you. But there's woods on both sides behind the gas station, behind my dad's house, all that's just wooded. And then it goes on and on and on. And yeah, I'm looking into the woods essentially next to this gas station. I see this black mass and it just looks huge, even for a kid, you know, as an adult. And I look at things that I used to look at as a child and I thought, oh, that looked way bigger. But as an adult, I can still take perspective and say, man, that thing was huge, like easily 10 feet, you know, but no distinct figure. The only way I can really explain it, it looked like, oh God, like a pom-pom, like a cheerleader's pom-pom, but with like tentacles almost, or like they weren't really stringy arms, but that many arms that were just thick and they came to points and they were moving and almost transparent at the ends, but really hard to discern any shape. And I see this thing and my eyes are fixated on it. I keep staring at it, you know, almost to the point where I don't even feel the pain anymore in my foot. I'm just so focused on this
right.
thing, and I can't stop looking away. And after a certain point, I see police sirens, you know, and like three police cars show up to the gas station and they're shining their flashlights on the side of the gas station where I was just looking at for like the past 10 minutes, you know, they're looking that was like the biggest thing that stuck out to me. It was like, you know, something just happened and I was watching it, but I couldn't make out what it was. I don't know. You know what,
right?
And it didn't look like anyone in the gas station had came out. And I remember at the time my dad had, you know, he walked to the front of the yard and he was investigating it, but told me to stay put. You know, all the other adults were looking. And then at some point he came back and told me like, hey, it's time to go inside. Like they never told me what happened. And I don't think I ever mentioned it to my dad as an adult, but yeah, it'd be interesting if he still remembers that night. And, yeah, maybe, I don't know what it was, but it's one of those things that's lingered in my head for years, and just listening to your stories brought it back.
Well, what I like about that story is I think the mask is cool, but the tentacles kind of remind me of like a Slender Man kind of thing.
Honestly, yeah. Like, you know, that, yeah. Like, imagine like a, instead of slender, like a thick man though, because it was wide and round. It was a thick boy. But
I see.
Slender Matt's tentacle, thick body man.
thick daddy thick in the woods. Daddy.
Yeah. Before the video begins, I just saw Thick Daddy. That's the title.
What are you doing, Thick Daddy? What are you doing, Step Thick Daddy?
What are you doing, Step Thick Daddy? Why are the police after you?
Woo? What? Yeah.
It's too funny.
I'm trying to think. Just talking about all this stuff, I'm kind of being flooded with all these different memories. I felt like I have also out in the woods. I'm trying to think. That's crazy how many. It's interesting. Not that this is related to anything, but I often theorize, especially recently, just kind of how, you know, if you know me or my channel or whatever. Obviously, I'm huge into cryptids. A lot of what I have a bunch of different theories of different cryptids and things like that. And I think a lot of them. Or at some point, whether in the past or whatever, I think a lot of the cryptids that we've been experiencing or that we've been witnessing or whatever, I think they're all extraterrestrial related somehow. And I've written some stories kind of around that concept. And I remember one time I was working a job. I was in Washington at the time. And he inspired me for a bunch of different series of stories. But I was helping this guy. He needed a ride home from where I worked. And so the place I worked at, I still work there, so I won't tell you where it's at. But I'm obviously in a different state than Washington. But same company. But I was giving a ride back, and he was telling me, he's ex-military, whatever, you know, high clearance or whatever. He knows all this stuff, right? And, you know, he's kind of like, he kind of gives off like a Walmart greeter kind of vibes. Like, you know, he's got the hat, you know, or whatever. And he's got, you know, some politically charged t-shirt. And, you know, so, you know, you just kind of look at these people and you're like, I don't know if I can take you seriously. But he brought up a lot of interesting things that he's actually inspired me to make stories around. Was number one, aliens are real and that they're here. Number two, that they're working for, they're collaborating with the government on making weapons. And then also, number three, he was telling me that they're looking at creating an alien human hybrid. For scientific purposes, but also as like a biological weapon. So I instantly hear that and I think to myself, how cool would that be if the government was collaborating with, you know, whatever, aliens, extraterrestrials, to make these creatures and then throwing them out into the woods to see how they would adapt. Because that in the past, that's what they've done for different national parks for, like, different predators. There'd be an invasive species of, you know, like a fish or a type of mammal or whatever, and they would eat a certain plant, and so they would introduce like wolves into this, you know, biosphere or this environmental area, and it would help correct the environmental issue of, you know, overpopulation of different things. And so I wrote a different, you know, sets of stories where they set these cryptid creatures, these alien hybrid creatures out into these national parks, and that's kind of what they're doing. They're doing population control, things like that. So I don't know. I don't know. You know, I don't know if I take that guy seriously or not. But definitely gave me something to think about, and it's, you know, it's, I think it's worth thinking about, especially now. I mean, if you look at the news, there, a lot of different agencies are confirming that there's different sightings of different aircraft or submersive vehicles that appear to be extraterrestrial.
Yeah. Yeah. I love how they're just like, yeah, yeah, they're real. They're real. Okay. All right, guys, fine. You know, they're just, it's, yeah, it's interesting. And something I heard, you know, during COVID time, when everyone was going crazy, was that one person that I knew at the time, he had theorized, or he was deeply passionate about this, like deeply, that COVID was, you know, something that was put out into the population to, you know, change the DNA of people. And essentially, you know, it was getting us ready to have a different atmosphere for when aliens come. And, you know, the people that lived were the ones that were able to adapt to it and, you know, live alongside the aliens. And I remember thinking, I was like, that's an interesting take. You know, but
or they're putting trackers in the thing
in the jab,
you know, they're population control, or I think it's just like, my gosh. Yeah. But I mean, the scary part about that, though, is the reason why that stuff is plausible is because weirder stuff has happened in the past. With the government, like there's, you know, like you look at like MK Ultra, where they just took a bunch of people and just gave them like all these drugs just to see what would happen to them, you know, or, you know, that's just things that we know about. Like I know, like during World War II, I think some of the terms of surrender or whatever for the Japanese is that they gave us all of their.
And one last message from our sponsors.
Documents and. Things that they learned from all the different torture things that they've done to people. And I know from that, that's how we learned that the human body is like 70% water, is because of their torture techniques to where they like dehydrated people and things like that. So, that's kind of where it's like, oh, it's too crazy, but at the same time, it's so crazy that it's plausible.
Yeah, that's crazy. I didn't know that last part. I always wondered how we knew.
Yeah.
You know, did they just put someone in a big, you know, like twisty, and they just squeezed out all the juice? I'm like, yep, that's about
70%. Yeah, they run it out like a wet towel. They're just like, yeah, that's about 70%.
They got back in the day, they would take the washboards for the clothing and they dry
just
it
all piss. Just
that dude is 70% piss.
just put that boy down as juicy.
Yeah, I always thought he was full of shit, but it just pissed.
That's how we learned pee was stored in the balls.
Yeah, and the guy is just like a pancake.
he's just
flat. He's like a cartoon pancake.
It's not exactly.
He's not even open. He's just like flattened. That's so funny.
It's like 2 inches wide or two. Yeah.
Yeah, he's still walking around. Well, guys, it's been a great study, and you know, you guys can see.
All right, good job, everyone. Let's take a lunch.
Yeah, he reconstitutes himself with a glass of water.
he fills.
Hey, anybody got a glass of piss?
Yeah,
I'm all out.
Yeah, can I get that piss back by chance, or is that gone?
Can I get it back? Well, I feel like we might have diverged from subject, but I think it was really interesting. I really loved just having you on tonight, and your take and your stories. They've been fascinating, and just crazy. It's super interesting. Well, I mean, I guess we'll close it up here. Do you want to say anything else to the listeners tonight before we get off here?
No, I think we touched on a lot of great things. I felt like you had a lot of great questions for me. Very entertaining. No, I had a great time, and I hope people at home enjoy.
I just want to say thanks again for listening, everybody. If you made it this far, then I'm sure you'd love to know where you can find more content. For more scary podcasts like this, and for a link to our Discord, where you can reach out to be interviewed on this show, please go to eeriecast.com. Thanks again.